Thank you, and welcome everyone this morning. Following these guys, I chose to steer clear to a large extent of the financial crisis and financial issues, and perhaps just make a few observations from a practitioner's point of view at a more nuts and bolts level as to how the PPP market has developed and how the model's actually been implemented on a number of projects over the last 10 years or so. The first comment I'd make is that, and I think Darren made the point, that there is a substantial difference between economic or demand-taking projects and social infrastructure projects, and the way that the financial issues have unfolded has affected both in fundamentally different ways. And in the case of social infrastructure projects, the risk allocation is pretty settled, and although there are discussions at the margin, the financing is still available with some issues around it. So please don't consider economic and social infrastructure in this environment as synonymous, because they're not. What I'd like to do in making my observations is to touch on a couple of points within the limited time. One is bid strategy from both sides. One is bid leadership from both sides, bid or tender leadership. The other is the issue of partnership. PPP connotes partnership, but partnership with who? A little bit about interactive tendering, or competitive dialogue, as it may be euphemistically called. And next, just about the role of the contract itself. Now, in relation to the first bid or tender strategy, bid costs is an issue that gets thrown up all the time, and it's a function of a number of factors. One is, on the government side, there is a clear need for competition. No competition, no value for money, no project. So government needs to have competitive tension in the process, and when I'm advising government, we keep that competitive tension running as late as possible in the process. And unfortunately, that means cost. The cost can be substantial, particularly if you're running bids right through to full documentation at the end of the day. So there is a dialogue going on about that in this environment, what can be done. There are some who, for example, say, well, you know, the work at the early stages really should be about design. It should be about engineering. It should be about the solution. And the rest of this stuff, you can leave it till after you've selected a preferred bidder. And I've got some sympathy for that view to an extent, and I think there will be changes there. But at the moment, there is a level of detail required in bids. Term sheets may be acceptable, may not. But there's a level of detail, a level of work, and the issue of bid costs isn't going to disappear off the table. In relation to financing, one of the things that's been floated recently, and Darren may have mentioned it, is do all the bids have to be financed? Do you have to have committed finance from a lender or team of lenders or syndicate for every bid? And can we not just say, OK, well, you can bid, forget about the finance, we'll run a finance competition once we've selected the bidder? That issue is getting a run at the moment. It does, however, require someone to take the risk on what the financing cost is actually going to be. And the issue then is equity going to take that risk? Is government going to take that risk? Or are they going to share it? Bid or tender leadership. The way that the Australian market has unfolded, very different from the UK, is that the investment banks took the lead early on, and I think they did a very good job. They innovated, and to be honest, I think they led the world in the way that they were structuring these deals, which is why they've managed to export that skill to the UK, the US, and elsewhere. They were risk takers. They put in the equity. They'd stake the bids and put in $1 million or whatever on the chance of winning. And it's interesting that the construction companies, the superannuation funds, and the like still struggle with that concept. They're organisers. They pull together the constructors, the facilities managers, the investors, knock their heads together, and try to come up with a risk allocation and a solution that won them the bid. In the UK, it's more of a contractor-led market, and I think there's some elements of that coming into Australian market, particularly as some of the investment banks, the Babcocks and Browns and others, have struggled. Partnership with who? From a government point of view, this model is really or should be about providing a long-term, quality, reliable service. And sure, it's about construction. You have to build and design something. But really, it's about long-term operation. And then, you know, who is your partner? The contractors build. Sure, they're on the hook for their defects period, but then they're gone. They may have some equity in for a short period of time. The operators are there. They're usually providing a fairly modest level of service, usually not with any significant equity. So the relationship on a day-to-day basis is with the operator, but it's really owners. It's the owner of the asset that really should be there for the long term. And the model has been developing so that you do have long-term institutional owners of these assets, or even, as is now developing, specialist long-term asset management companies that act for superannuation funds and the like. So that's where long-term ownership should be. That's where the stake is, and I think that's where government needs to focus its efforts. Interactive tendering. Some projects have been delivered with virtually no dialogue going on between the bidders and those that actually use the asset at the end of the day, the hospital, the prison, whatever it might be. And some very difficult, very adverse outcomes have been achieved. In recent times, the projects have been much more sensible. Workshopping has been undertaken with the bidders pre-bid so that they can actually understand what's required. When these projects go out to market, they go out on what's called an output basis. So in other words, government doesn't go out and say, what we want you to do is X, Y, and Z. What they say is, what we want from this facility is A, B, and C. In other words, in output or outcome terms. And that really does often require clarification, and that's why these workshops are essential. Sometimes probity or process gets in the way, but I think lessons are being learned there. Good project directors on the government side, experienced people, are actually seeing the wood from the trees there, and the process or probity advisors, and I apologise if there are any in the room, are not being allowed to interfere with that process unnecessarily. Good governance and process is important, and public perception is important, but at the end of the day, good outcomes are even more important. Talking briefly about the place of the contract, these are 25, 30, 30-year arrangements, and in a sense, they are virtual projects. What they are is a network of legal and other relationships between a number of parties that have to endure. So they have to provide two elements which, in a sense, are contradictory. One is they have to provide certainty. Large amounts of capital are being invested, and the parties need to know where they stand. But to provide a service and to upgrade, maintain a facility for that length of period, they also have to be flexible. There are a number of mechanisms built into these contracts that try to balance those two conflicting elements. And they're still being worked on, they're still being developed, and they're much better now than they used to be. And it's important that work continues. So just wrapping up, the work that is continuing is being done in all the states that are delivering these projects, but also now at a national level, which I think is a great initiative. So through agencies such as IPA, Infrastructure Australia has been developed, and some senior people appointed from private sector and public. There are national guidelines for these projects now, which has brought together, I think, the best of what's available in all the states. The Commonwealth is I think, on board at a senior political and bureaucratic level, and some of the Commonwealth agencies, such as Defence, are looking seriously at using this model for their projects, probably not for those large items of equipment that are going to come in harm's way, but there are a number of other things that they can do. So it is really developing as a national market, which it needs to do, and hopefully I look forward to Western Australia being part of that initiative. Thank you.